Some of you are old enough to remember the 80s, but which 80s? The one with Frogger on the Atari, Thighmasters, Ronald Reagan's Morning in America, Escape, or as you might have called it, the Pina Colada song.
If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain.
Or the other 80s, the one burbling like a geyser ready to blow, with a growing AIDS epidemic, drug addiction, and alongside punk, straight edge. That's Straight Edge by the band Minor Threat, the song that became the movement that still exists, rejecting alcohol, drugs, meat, sex. The Flower Children of the 60s went on to start movements of their own. The environmental movement comes to mind, but some, lost in a haze, spawned Straight Edgers, and they are the centerpiece of a new, how the New York Times put it, beautiful debut novel from Eleanor Henderson, 10,000 Saints. And Eleanor joins us in the studio with more. Welcome.
Thank you.
How's that feel, author Eleanor Henderson?
It feels pretty good.
Yeah, I bet it does. And you live and teach in a college town, Ithaca, New York. But how old are you? I'm sorry to ask, you know, but...
That's okay. You're allowed to ask. 31.
So you were not in the straight edge movement. What drew you to it?
I wasn't. I was 8 during the time that the book takes place. So I was a little bit removed from that period. And so I was really drawn to writing about this period, the late 1980s, because that was the time that my husband came of age. So he's a little bit older than I am, and he came of age the same time that my main character, Jude, does. He grew up on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and the world of the book is really his world. It's not a book that's based on his life, but he certainly introduced me to the setting and to the straight edge scene in particular.
And do that for us. Who were these people?
Well, they fascinated me from the first time that I heard about them. Straight edge kids, as they self-identify, are kids who just say no to drugs, as you said. That is the most common factor among all straight edge kids, but there are lots of different branches and interpretations of straight edge.
This was sort of a punk version.
Certainly, yeah. And that's one of the most common threads, too, is this devotion to hardcore punk.
And this sense of, I'm not eating meat and I'm not doing drugs or alcohol, but I'm bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, in some way, these kids resemble choir boys. You know, they on paper have a very clean lifestyle that they're trying to follow. But in other ways, they look like the typical kind of misfit kids that you would associate with more aggressive musical movements. So those paradoxes really drew me into the story of straight edge. But not all straight edge kids have such an extreme version of the lifestyle, but I wanted to push those limits with these characters in particular.
Well, and you do. And how much are these characters in particular, in addition to rejecting the things straight edge rejected, also rejecting, damning, really, their parents? Let's set this up a little bit. In this case, the parents are the aging hippies Les and Harriet. He's a marijuana dealer still. She's a glassblower. She makes bongs. Former hippies might be offended by them because they come off as just, oh, whatever happens to the kids. It's, you know, slackers. Or as the New York Times says, one wonders if Les has the good sense God gave a piece of lint.
Yeah, he's not the most sensible father figure. Harriet, his ex, has a little bit more luck in raising her kids with a little more sense. But these are parents who aren't the best role models for their kids.
Well, and their kid, Jude, doesn't start out straight edge. Let's introduce him. He's 16 years old. He has a friendship with Teddy in a small town in Vermont. As you describe them, we can picture them, you know, with their skateboards, their provocative haircuts. They're the constant target of bullies. Tell us more about Jude and Teddy.
Well, Jude and Teddy are growing up in this kind of alternative Burlington, Vermont that I call Lintonburg in the book. And it's the biggest town in Vermont, but there's not a lot of excitement happening there. So they sort of invent their own entertainment. And that comes in the form of following Jude's father's example of inventive ways of getting high. So, you know, they make beer in the bathtub and they sniff turpentine. And
they huff?
Yeah, they huff.
Inhaling turpentine.
That's
and
right. They find whatever they can, whatever substances happen to be around in Jude's house.
Well, and here's where you get kind of angry at these parents because, you know, your money's disappearing. Your own stash of dope is disappearing all the time. You know, I mean, they're the kind of parents who think that, well, if I offer the drugs to the kid, it's going to bond me with them.
And right. These are parents who are more or less condoning their kids' drug use to discourage their kids from experimenting would sort of go against the flower children's ethos. Mm. So these kids have some mixed messages that they're getting from their parents. And eventually, Jude and his friends end up completely rejecting that model. So they go from one extreme to the next.
Right. But before they do that, events send Jude to New York City, where he searches for Teddy's brother, Johnny, who at all of 18 is a leader in the straight edge movement. He's a tattoo artist. And he has a band. And Jude goes to see Johnny perform at CBGB's, the big place. Jude, as we said, not yet rejecting drugs. He's so high on mushrooms. Can you read a passage? Because it sort of seems to speak to this time that we're talking about. They're in the club, and Jude is watching Johnny perform.
Sure. The stage wasn't a stage, but a knee-high platform. And Jude was drawn to it as if tied to a rope. Was it fame? The band was glowing. It was the yellow lights, the vibration of the speakers through the concrete floor. But it was also just the band. It was Johnny, the loops in his ears shining like real gold. It wasn't fame. Famous people were untouchable, unknowable. Jude could see the pores glistening on Johnny's scalp. It was unfame, the opposite of fame. He was touchable and entirely knowable. He was memorizable, like a sister or a dog. Jude fought through the field of bouncing bodies. A dance had started up in front of the stage, a boisterous, good-natured ritual that involved hurling one's body like a sack of flour at other bodies. Arms windmilled, shoes flew, everything within an inch of stage diving. Jude was close enough to the band to feel the radiance of their sweat, their spit.
Author Eleanor Henderson reading from her new novel, 10,000 Saints. We're going to have more in 1 minute, here and now. We're speaking with Eleanor Henderson. Her new novel, 10,000 Saints, is about the straight edge music movement, which was born in the 80s but is still here today. Straight edge has a lot of strains, but her characters reject sex, drugs, eating meat. Some don't mind a little violence, and they pour a lot of pent-up energy into their music. So here's some that Eleanor listened to as she wrote. That's the band Agnostic Front, before that Gorilla Biscuit, Youth of Today. In Eleanor's stunning new novel, 10,000 Saints, 16-year-old Jude listens to those bands as well. He gets caught up in the straight-edge music scene in New York City after a childhood romance with drugs with his friend Teddy goes terribly wrong. Jude moves to New York and finds 18-year-old Johnny, Teddy's half-brother, a straight-edge star. Eventually, Johnny and Jude and some of their friends form a band. And Eleanor, here's where the novel becomes sort of a punk Peter Pan, because they go on the road accompanied by Eliza, who plays the part of Wendy. You know, she travels with them. Her mother is well-to-do, educated. She's a ballerina in Manhattan. And Eliza is pregnant and as lost as Jude, who was brought up by, as we said, pot-smoking, aging hippies in Vermont. You seem to be saying that getting caught up in Straight Edge isn't about class or geography.
Yeah, Eliza lives on the Upper West Side and is going through a number of boarding schools, getting kicked out for various reasons, most of them having to do with drugs. I think this generation of kids coming of age in the 80s finds various reasons to find drugs. Her drug of choice is cocaine, which she introduces to Teddy early in the book. So they have different drug influences coming from their parents, but they're all attracted to this family of Straight Edge for different reasons.
Is one of those reasons rejecting the idea of numbing and really wanting to feel?
Yeah, these are kids who want to feel, who want to live intense lives and also want to form an intense kind of family that they're not getting in these kind of frayed families that they are adopted into in Jude's case or find themselves in for whatever reason. So yeah, I mean, it's about a musical movement and it's about a rejection of the influences of the previous generation. But I think it's about more than just this Straight Edge movement. You know, the Straight Edge movement was a kind of vehicle for these kids to identify as teenagers.
But also to have someone say to them, whether it's Johnny or Jude, hey, straighten up. You know, you can't be in our crowd if you do drugs or eat meat. I mean, talk about boundaries. These are hard, fast restrictions.
Yeah, and Jude needs that kind of discipline, and he doesn't get it at home. And so it's interesting to me to see that, you know, for example, a lot of Straight Edge kids ended up joining the military because they needed that kind of discipline that they weren't getting at home. And so Jude really falls hard for Johnny's big brother persona that he didn't have otherwise.
Well, the story erupts in the Tompkins Square riots of 1988, Tompkins Square in New York, where skinheads and the homeless and the disenfranchised, especially young gay men, gathered. Mayor Koch at the time, the mayor of New York, was trying to set a curfew. There was this rebellion against that, turned into a bloody put down by the police. Was there some parallel between that moment and what seemed to be the fraying of the Straight Edge movement when kids got tired of, you know, being on the road and keeping track of each other? And one great line, one kid, they had no money, one kid sleeping in a motel curled around the base of a porcelain toilet like a cashew. Remember that? Is there a parallel between the uprising in Tompkins Park and the sort of reality of the Straight Edge movement not really surviving?
Yeah, I think in a way for these kids that's true. At this particular point in the book, the kids have had a long summer of touring, and the limits of the scene are really beginning to show. Jude has started to take a good thing a little bit too far. But, you know, the Straight Edge movement didn't die in 1988. It again is still going strong in all over the world. So I think really what this moment in Tompkins Square Park is paralleling is these kids coming of age and being sort of pushed out of the nest, and they can't stay Straight Edge forever. They have to grow up, and as their parents didn't. So this city is growing up in a really painful kind of way as the Lower East Side is being gentrified, in that climactic moment of the Tompkins Square Park riots. And, you know, at one point I compare the rebellion of this neighborhood against Mayor Koch with these kids who are rebelling against their parents. So, you know, the parents step in finally, and these kids are able to move on with some growing pains.
Yeah. Well, and the book culminates with at least one of the characters in 2006 with, I think, a baby attached to him or something, looking back on his young life.
Right.
Is a part of this, too, about, you know, we all look back at a wake, the wake you've left.
Right. Yeah, you know, I was hesitant to write this epilogue because I usually don't like to see characters grow up. But I didn't want readers to know that Jude has grown up and that he's okay and that he becomes a parent himself. And I also wanted people to have some sense of the city that's grown up or that has changed and that is still changing. Because when I lived in New York just briefly in 2001, 2002, even then it was such a dramatically changed city.
And from the 80s.
From the 80s. And I wasn't there in the 80s, but just hearing my husband's stories, I felt, you know, as I was passing by the Chipotle one day, that this is a coming of age that I wanted to acknowledge some way.
And yet, you know, there are punkers who would say, they ruined it.
Sure.
It's exactly the chain stores and the fact that there's, you know, families in Tompkins Square Park, you know, and that Times Square is so safe and it's ruined.
Right. It's a bittersweet ending, I think, you know, for the city and for the book, that this is now a safer place where you can play with your kids and walk your dog. But it certainly lost some of its edge.
Yeah. I just want to mention in the acknowledgments, you thank your parents for letting you know you can do anything you want to do, but you seem to be telling someone named Nicholas, you can do anything too, except the stupid things in this book.
That's right. Nicholas is my son at home who will be 3, and he is not allowed to read this book until his 18th birthday. Yeah, I was hesitant to write a book about boys getting into trouble, and now I'm pregnant with boy number 2, so I guess that's what I get. So I'm going to have to be careful to avoid the path of the mother in this book, for sure.
Eleanor Henderson, her new book is 10,000 Saints. 10,000 Saints?
Yeah, 10,000 Saints comes from the book of Jude. And the epigraph of the book is, "Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all." I really think about the boys in this book as being this army of saints. At least they fancy themselves as saints, but that sainthood is really complicated in the book. So we see a couple of different sides of sainthood in the novel.
Eleanor, thanks so much.
Thank you.